Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Speakeasy Podcast. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan, and we are from ReverseThieves.com, the number one coolest anime blog and podcast on the whole internet. And if you would like to comment and talk to the hosts of the most popular blog and podcast on the internet, you can try your best. We might deem you worthy enough if you send us information. ReverseThieves@gmail.com. Or you can be like, you know, kind of in a parasocial relationship with us if you want to jump on our Discord and get kind of like a reflected glory and coolness.
Wow. You know, I have not heard the word parasocial so much in the last 2 weeks that I don't know. Maybe it's just because I learned what it meant. And so now I catch it.
Well, you mentioned like, that, so that's why I threw in Paris also.
It's just come up so much lately. And you can go on the Discord. We post our manga of the month there. We post the podcast there, obviously. Ask some questions there sometimes. And also just chat about what we're watching. Al has been talking about Urusei Yatsura episodes. And I did, in fact, make a One Piece spoilers manga thread. So that we can all, and it has been very active. So it's been nice on there. This episode of the podcast, we are going to be talking about all movies all the time. I feel like we always end up with like at least one episode every year that's at all movies. We'll also be talking about a couple of things that are just like favorite stuff from 2022 that aren't anime and manga. Because the January 2023 episode will be all about all of our favorites from the past year. But first...
Ah, yes, it is the Type Moon Minute. There's not a lot to talk about, like I mentioned last month. I did, when we recorded, it was just the beginning of Anime NYC. So I did, thankfully, get to see the Fate Grand Order panel at Anime NYC that had the voice of Saber herself, Ayako Kawasumi, as one of the guests. She was a lot more talkative than I expected her to be. I expected them to trot her out. She'd just say a few words and then, so that was, it was, I would definitely think I would have, if they had not streamed it, I think I would have missed out, so I was glad to actually be able to see her. The only thing that was odd, and I think it was just what they asked her, they didn't ask her about what she ate while she was in New York, because much like the character of Saber, Ayako Kawasumi really does like to eat, and usually when she's on like podcasts or stuff in Japan, or like, you know, FGO streams, they almost always ask her like, what's the last thing or like place she's eaten and like what she would recommend. So they did not ask that at all. We did learn that she went in her like day or two before, like they had her, you know, they had her around New York City before she had to do the panel. And she went to the Guggenheim, the Met, and she went to see Phantom of the Opera. So very classic, I guess, high art Ayako Kawasumi visit to New York City. But I'm sure she ate at some place.
I bet she ate a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure if they had asked her about that, they could have gotten a... I mean, if I was there, that's the question I would have asked her.
They should have asked you.
As Type Moon Man fan number one, what should we ask Ayako Kawasumi about? I would have been like, what did she eat in New York? This is even a topic Kate would have like.
I feel like it's just food is always a good topic. I feel like everybody has opinions about food. Everybody has favorite foods. Most people like to, you know,
try new
eat
food.
Or going on a vacation. There's usually a lot of eating. So,
but the interesting things that weren't Ayako Kawasumi were Fate Grand Order got the pity system early in North America, where basically, if you do a certain number of roles, you have to get the character on the banner. So we only just got that recently in the Japan version, but they got it like a year and a half early in North America. And they also did some like other like, you know, quality of life stuff that we've gotten over the last year and a half. They just gave them all to North America. So that was very nice of them.
I feel like just general upgrades to software should not be held back. It's not like a...
Well, they've just been doing it more and more, that like basically any software improvement they do to Japan, they give it to North American version not that far. Like they've been delaying the time in between them. So they're pretty much like once they do it in Japan, not that many months before they get it in North America, which has been nice for them. People should be able to order, which on a holy night, the digital version only. If you want the physical version, you'll have to wait till January. My roommate should technically get the Asian version, but he like didn't pay for like the quickest shipping, so we won't get it for a little while. So maybe next in the January episode, I'll have some things also to talk about of me hopefully at least playing a little of Witch on a Holy Night, but that really depends on when it arrives at the house. Although if you want, I did find out there is on PlayStation and Switch, you can play a demo version of Witch on a Holy Night, which has, you know, like I think like the first two chapters. Other than that, the only real news is that a whole bunch of books are going to be released on December 31st, January 1st. I think 4 new Type Moon novels are going to be released in conjunction with the streams. So I'm sure I'll have, with, you know, the New Year stream and all these new novels coming out, and there should be a lot to talk about next month on the Type Moon roundup. So we're a little short this month, but I'll have lots to talk about when I see you next time, Type Lunatics. So, as is tradition, we have continued, even though we no longer run it, to run, at least participate in Anime Secret Santa. I was the only one who signed up this year again, but this year, Kate and I both technically participated because we both watched my pick. So one of them was The Deer King. One of them was fucking someone try to get me to watch Tanya the Evil again.
See, Al, I think it's because now you have a big reaction. And maybe now everyone's just trolling you.
It's possible. I won't watch your fucking Nazi show. Fuck you guys. If I have to take a... If the hill I have to die on is not watching the Nazi show, then so be it.
Just saying.
I don't even remember what the other one was, but I was like, Deer King is something. It's just a movie. Not that hard to knock out. Me and Kate can both watch it, and then we can both have an opinion. And it was like plenty of places to rent it. So we both rented it.
Yeah, and this is something that was on my list because I had seen an advertisement for it, and I knew it was based on a novel by the Morimoto author. And so I was like, well... Like, that seems like an easy yes, essentially. So having that sort of pedigree, and I feel like you could already see, it's very interesting because it definitely had, like, I don't think necessarily like Morimoto and Aaron the Beast, I'm trying to remember what that one was called.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't feel like both of those, this one felt more pushing into the Ghibli, like a little bit more Ghibli-esque, I think, in terms of the production.
But I did feel like it did still feel very Morbido-esque, especially with like the politics and a lot of stuff. Like, you definitely could tell it was by the same author if you thought about it. Like,
yeah,
their fingerprints are very clearly there.
It was interesting because, yeah, there's a lot of political strife that sort of is the center of this film. And one of the, and so we have two factions that are technically at peace with one another because one of them, they made a deal, I guess you could sort of say, that like technically they're not at war with each other, but.
Well, one country is basically an occupying force. Like, they've been at war for years.
But they're not in a current war. Like, there's, like, guerrilla fighting. But, like, technically, they're, like, a united group or whatever.
Well,
it's, like, bullshit.
Well, yeah, because it's very clear that the one country is occupying the other one. Like, the old king is still, and his advisors are still there. But they're basically... But there's, like, a... There's the actual guy who's in charge, and then there's, like, the figurehead old government that they just have decided not to wipe out yet.
Right, but they're also scheming.
Yeah.
And, like, a huge part of...
Oh, yeah.
What ultimately, like, bad things that are happening. Mm-hmm. Like, what I thought was interesting that was ultimately, like, neither of these governments are good in this... I feel like in the context of the story, even though, like, obviously one is an occupier and one is, but like from the top level, not the people are bad, but like the systems in place are bad, essentially. And then the other part of this, very important part of this story, is that there is an outbreak. There is a disease that is ravaging people, and it's happened before in this land, and people think that it's a curse from these magical, mystical wolves that pass through these areas, and it only affects the
occupying armies' forces.
Exactly. So people are like, it's if you're on that other side, you're like, it's retribution for like wrongs, etc. And then we have a prisoner who gets infected by this disease but does not die from it, who escapes with a child and has a mysterious past. He's a mysterious stranger. And then there is a doctor. Doctors Without Borders comes. They're like, we want to understand this infectious disease. Science is real. And so, like, their paths end up crossing.
Because, like, the occupying force has their, like, priest doctors, but they're mostly just concerned, like, they're very, like, concerned more about, like, spiritual matters. And it's just like, burn everybody who's infected. And... who can figure out how to cure this? No one. It's just a curse. And he's like, actually, I think that, like, if I do enough tests and stuff and, like, use the scientific method, I could actually find, like, a way to, like, you know, make sure that no one gets this disease. And they're all like...
No, we're good, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually don't know. I didn't look up, like, when this was written. But, like, felt really relevant, and will probably continue to feel very relevant.
You mean especially by the number of people who were like, no, I don't want to take this vaccine?
And also, like, the people who were saying, you know, like, I mean, they let a major political figure die because they're like, no, you heal with, like, your purity of soul, you know, like that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily even, like, a modern concept, right?
Yeah.
It just feels really, like...
prescient.
Yeah, but, like, that's not new because I think there was other epidemics that you could map onto what's happening in here, in this story. So I'm not trying to say it's about COVID because I I don't think that it is, but like it feels really relevant. So the other part of this is the man who is the former prisoner who escapes with the child. He's trying to protect this child, and he ends up like living with a group of people for a while. And then we learn about his past and like how he's related to this war. And also, you know, magic is there's it's interesting the way that this story I thought blended science and magic, and not in like a, you know, I feel like you see that a little bit more in like a steampunk kind of a thing, but this was, I felt like a little more, like for actually it, for I feel like for like almost half the movie I wasn't even sure if magic was real or if it was like a visual kind of metaphor. But magic is real in this
but
world.
But basically has to play by a lot of the rules of science, which is something that apparently only that doctor guy realizes. Because he's not like against magic, but he's like, but there are rules. And if you just figure these things out, you can, what do you call it? You can get stuff done.
So we've got, you know, his path. And then the former prisoner's path, and like his past is really relevant to the both the occupying government and the former government that's trying to come back into power, because who he is, I'm trying not to like totally give it away here, but like it's like who he is. He's not a king. That's what I'll say. It's not like some story about like monarchy, but like. Some people are trying to kill him, and some people are trying to capture him. And then the doctor wants him because he's like, hey, man, if you didn't get killed by this disease, that means that, like, we could maybe make a vaccine from, like, your blood and stuff like that. So everybody's sort of after him, and he's, like, going on this journey both to protect this girl who becomes his found family and also to find out why he doesn't, you know, what this magic means.
One other important character is there's this tracker lady that is hired essentially by the deposed government to find this our main character, and supposedly like bring him to the doctor so they can find the cure.
No, she's trying to kill him.
Well, I thought that was the official story, but
no.
Okay.
Because the deposed government like once they don't want a cure because it only kills the occupying.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought that they told everybody that they would. She was.
Oh no, I think they really want him dead.
Oh no, I know that in the end they really want him dead. I thought the official story was she was just but capture him alive, kill that motherfucker.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were saying that was their actual motive. And no. I was like, no.
No, no, no. But their official story when like they're in front of all the occupying armies. It's like, yeah, get this guy. Tracker lady, get this guy and bring him back alive so we can all get a cure to the disease. Kill his ass.
Right. Okay. Yes. Yes, totally. Yes.
Kill. Because, yeah, no, it's very clear that... yeah, that she wants him dead. It's just that whenever they're in front of the officials from the occupying government, they're like, she's our best tracker, and she's definitely on the trail to make sure that this guy comes back alive. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We're totally on your side, guys.
I feel like the story is a little meandery at points.
Because it definitely feels like four stories. I was thinking about how to talk about this. And so to not be too spoilery, there's the initial escape from like the prison mine. Then there's the like settling into the village of deer herders. Then there's the kidnapping and trying to get back, and then there's the big conclusion. And each of those four kind of feels slightly different from each other. They all flow into each other. It's not like it's like, where did this part come from? But I would say that like each of them kind of plays a little differently and almost feels like it felt a little long.
Agreed.
But not, I was like, none of the parts individually felt like they were too long, or none of them felt unnecessary. But because there were these four separate, like four major chapters, like, I don't know, like, which one of them you could cut out to make it streamlined, but because there were four distinct parts of the story that felt a little different, I totally get what you're saying. It did feel a little like, it does feel like this is like a recent trend in like Japanese like animated movies. They feel like if they get an animated budget, they've got to tell a longer story. So I feel like there's like a bit of lack recently of like punchy, like quick movies. It feels like even back when, and this is dating myself, but didn't you say like Welcome to the Space Show, one of the major problems with that guy felt like it could have been much better if they like knew how like to like cut this movie in half or something.
Oh my gosh. Wow, I haven't thought about that movie in a while.
But like that one's too long. I've never watched it because you guys all complained about it. Like, I was like, of our little group, like the only one who didn't see it, but you guys complained about it so much. It's like stuck out how much you guys complained. And like, I think everybody had like little things. They differed on little things that they didn't like about Welcome to the Space Show. But the like number one complaint that everybody shared was too long.
And like this one, it's not like I hated it. Like, yeah. Space Show, I definitely had like way stronger negative feelings about. I'm definitely not saying that Deer King was like exorbitantly long. There were just some parts where I was sort of like, okay, like let's, like I get it, like a little bit. And then I think also the ending for me, it's almost like to me the ending was a little out of order, which is hard to really explain without spoiling it, so I won't explain that. But there's like a big moment, and then we have a confrontation. And, you know, there's like a decision made, and our main character makes a decision, and then the person that he's making that decision with just seems to be like, all right, cool. All right, fine. And then you have a moment of calm, but like the moment of calm lasts like too long. And so then when it comes back, it was like, wait, it felt random, I guess. And then I was like, did a god just interfere? I don't know. I felt like the resolution was a little bit hard for me to parse. Because like there's no, as far as we see in, like there is magic, but we don't see any actual like deities or like the intervention of any sort of divine beings. So I didn't know if something that happens in the end was related to that, or if it wasn't, then like that was just like a really convenient thing to have happen. I don't know. So I felt like maybe I was, when I said that it was too long, I wonder if I'm really reacting to like just the ending, the way they decided to do the ending of the story. Because I really liked the first half quite a bit. And then I wonder if the second half, even though there's like more action in the second half, it felt like a little bit long. And I also, but one thing I did really like about the ending was that the political strife is not settled. And in certain contexts, that would be very unsatisfying. But in the context of this film, I thought it made sense, like, I guess, to resolve it that way. Because ultimately, like, you couldn't resolve that issue with the story that this story, like, that with the plot of what this story is about. Like, it will probably help things in that relationship, but I liked that it wasn't like this portion of these people's lives are not going to then change the entire outcome of like the occupiers of this region, but that there is hope for like a future.
Yeah, it definitely felt like, because I feel like there was an interest. I don't want to do too many spoilers, but it did feel like even if certain people's plans went through, it's not like let's say you kill like one head of state. It's not like then that whole. It's not like you killed the emperor and then, you know, the Galactic Empire falls. I'm sure he had relatives. Somebody else would have just taken their place. And like certain peoples who have like evil agendas would have like moved ahead and definitely been better places to bargain. But like it was clear, even if certain things had gone off the way they were intended to, this wouldn't have resolved. It would have just, different people would have been in different places of power. And so it makes sense that the way things go, you know, the status quo was not the same that it was when the movie started, but it's also not, and everyone lived happily ever after.
Right. And now all of this, this very complicated political situation is now completely fixed. And it all, like, and like I said, my one spoiler was like, and it doesn't end with like monarchy, the king returns or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, not, nope, not this, that's not the story. So like, I thought that that was, an interesting way to end it. I really, the themes that I enjoyed in the movie was, there's a really strong theme about found family in here, which I really appreciated and I really like. Because the little girl that our main character rescues and helps raise in this film is not biologically his, but like very immediately he sees her as his daughter. And so I really liked, and then there's more, there's a continuation of that sort of like as the film goes on. So I really liked that theming. And then I think I already said this, but I really liked sort of the myth versus science.
Yeah, like the doctor is probably one of the coolest characters in the whole.
Also very handsome doctor, very Bishonen doctor. So.
I did find it interesting that I was just thinking about the animation quality. I would say it's always above average, but there are very few like amazing Sakuga scenes that I feel like it's just interesting, especially with like the number of like Shonen Jump TV shows and like movies and stuff that have like near theatrical for very certain points. It was always like above average, but it was never like, I'd say like the few times that like the like animation got really good, it was always in chase scenes. Like the fight scenes are actually usually pretty quick. They're not necessarily always super realistic, but they're also not like 20-minute sword fight. They're very like usually pretty quickly decisive. I mean, there's a point where like somebody like blocks like blowgart guns with a knife, so everything's not amazing balls, like totally like the most realistic fighting ever. Like, did you remember any scenes that were like super amazingly well? Like, this is what you get with the theatrical budget.
I agree. In the chase scenes, there were, especially because, so there's a lot of like horses and wolves and deer that are very, very hard to draw and animate. So like, I feel like in the chase scenes with that sort of stuff, I think that's when they were really doing more of that.
Those were probably the best animated scenes of the whole.
But I don't think that's what the movie is about.
No.
You know what I mean? It's not a movie about like cool fights or whatever. And I think a lot of the money is also in the backgrounds. Like the environment is a huge,
I mean, it's always part, nice to look at.
Huge part of the story. Not only the story, like story, but just like in the movie, I feel like the environment looms large. And they go through a lot of different environments and such. Because you do have a progression from these, like, underground mines that are oppressive and really, like, destroying the land to, like, these mountains or the area where, like, the wolves come from and, like, those things. And I was trying to think about, like, I do think this movie maybe has a bit of, like, go back to the land, you know, like, that, like, humanity should go back to, like, the simpler land, you know, simpler living off the land kind of. I think there's a little bit of messaging like that because, like, the people that are thriving are, like, that farm, like, village where also the different,
the two, like, countries people are, like,
are commingling and, like, you know, are a community together, which is, like, I'm not saying that's bad, but there was definitely, like, some anti-industrialization, I guess you could say, so.
But at least they were at least pro-science with that.
Exactly. I'm not saying, I don't think anybody would say we should treat our environment worse now. Like, I don't think anybody is saying that, so it's not a bad message, but I feel like there was a little bit of idyllic, you know, simple life sort of thing. The most important question is, were you also misreading for, like, the first half of the movie that the people were named the Aquafresh? Like, I was like, wait, what? Hold on. I gotta slow down with these subtitles because I know that's wrong.
Being oppressed by the cruel Colgate Kingdom. We never saw, if you, like, read the sequel book, you find out about the, you know, the Crest Empire.
So overall, Al, so especially since, I mean, I just burst in on this anime Secret Santa, like, pick, so.
I think it was pretty good. I looked it up while we were talking here. The other thing wasn't a bad choice. It was just Major the Second. It's like the sequel series of Major. It's the first season of the sequel series of Major that's about the son of the guy from Major. And that was a good choice. Like, if the other two choices had been garbage, I definitely would have picked that one because that would have been enjoyable. But I just figured this one seemed a little more interesting. And plus, me and Kate could both watch it and weigh in. And I think that would just made better podcasting. So that's why I picked The Deer King. I enjoyed it. I thought it was an entertaining story. Once again, I feel like a little editing, just like, not like they didn't have to cut out a part, like just trim down a little bit from each of the four parts. Maybe the first part was actually probably just the right, but maybe the other three parts, I think it would have been a little more satisfying, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was an interesting story, some cool characters, some cool action. Interesting ideas. Very, like, I like the politics of it. So that was interesting. I would recommend it with maybe some, like, caveats to certain people, but you know, a thumbs up. Although not, like, my strongest thumb up, but, like, a solid thumbs up.
I think that's about where I landed with it. Like, I liked it. I didn't love it. Had some questions. I felt like there were some questionable choices in the end. But, like, overall, like good. I don't regret it.
Yeah, I'd put it between good plus and great minus. So, since this is our all movies podcast, I wanted to. Well, Kate wasn't in New York. I saw some movies with some of our friends. And one of them was Goodbye, Don Gleese. And the other one was Gundam, Dolan's Island.
I feel like they're both G and D. It's like Gundam, Dolan's Island. G Goodbye, Don Gleese. I don't know. Something about that amuses me.
So Goodbye, Don Gleese is there's this small, like, once again, small, like, ad, like kind of Hicks Japanese town. And there are these two kids who are kind of like the nerdy outcasts that formed the Don Gleese Club because people really like all the popular kids and didn't like these two kids and everybody else didn't care about them. So they formed their little club. And when it's time to go to high schools, one of the kids stays and goes to the local high school, and one of them goes to like a prestigious, like help you get into the good college kind of high school in Tokyo. So
this already makes me sad. Is it a sad movie?
A little bit. Oh, and originally they were supposed to both go to Tokyo, but the other kid was just not good enough in the grades, so he had to stay back. And he finds out there's another member of the Don Gleese Club. And so there's like a little bit of like tension because it's like, who's this new kid? And the new kid's like super ganky and like weirdo. And like the kid who went to Tokyo's like a little jealous. And like this new kid seems to totally have his ear. And he basically like convinces him to spend a whole bunch of money on this drone. Which they want to basically use to like film the big fireworks festival. And for some reason, because of the fireworks festival, there's a big fire that breaks out. And the popular kids saw their drone. And the popular kids blame the big forest fire in the area on the Don Gleese Club. And their drone gets like, during the forest fire, it gets blown off. And so they're like, if we could get the footage on the drone, we could prove that we didn't start the forest fire. So it becomes this like little journey of the Don Gleese Club to like go into the forest and find their missing drone to give the evidence that they didn't start the fire. As me and everybody who watched this movie said, oh, so it essentially becomes Anime Standby.
No notes.
So it's these three kids who basically have to go on a adventure in the woods where they learn a lot about each other. They have fights and they come back together and they realize once again, spoilers, that the most important thing is their friendships or, you know, or lack thereof because of their distance and coming together as friends and, you know, and the drone becomes less important than their feelings and their friendship. And
does it pull it off?
So
that's what's important. Did you feel those feelings, Al?
So here's my opinion. One, it is a beautiful movie. Like everything we said about the Deer King, times two. Like the forests that they go through are just so lovingly drawn. And like there is like the kid also came from overseas. And then they talk about like where like he lived for a while. And like the vistas there are like this like, you know, Nordic like wonderland. And, you know, just some beautiful like Japanese scenery, some beautiful European scenery. Just beautiful. So it looks gorgeous. So that's definitely a reason to watch it. But on the other hand, it feels, we've talked about this before. I'm not sure how long ago we've talked. I think we've also talked a little bit about it on the podcast. We've talked a lot more about it in person. About Japanese drama feel. How like there's a very like there's some things that feel like anime, and there's some things that feel like Japanese dramas. And like sometimes those things cross-pollinate each other. Sometimes you'll find, because they're part of the same culture, sometimes you'll find Japanese drama stuff in anime and anime stuff in Japanese drama. And this definitely feels like an anime that is taking cues from, because there's definite parts of the end that feel very Japanese drama. And so like there's some parts that at the end are emotionally powerful, but if are very sorry to use the TV tropes, but it's the first thing that comes to my mind. Very fridge logic. Like, they work in the story, but if you think about them a little bit too much after you've watched it, you're like, wait, how did that work again? But they're like very clearly there for Japanese drama purposes. So like, if you don't mind kind of a little bit of fridge logic that's like there for like tear jerky or like big emotional payoff reasons, it's all fine. But if you're like one who like, I don't know, like watches CinemaSins and likes to like, but wait, this is technically a plot hole. Ooh, you might. There was like one or two things that were like, they definitely just make this work and don't think you're going to hopefully think about it too much. But I mean, it's very beautiful. There's some very funny parts. It's at some point, there are some major sakuga, like, just like budget and time was thrown into this like one scene or shot. The only other thing is you're like, oh, so this is the end. There's like three endings. There's like the ending to them if they find the drone or not and come back. Like literally the trip back home is like in a voiceover. But, you know, once again, at that point, most of the emotional drama is settled and they've either found the drone or not and decided to go back home. And, you know, so the trip back home isn't that important. Then there's like two more endings to various things. And so, like when you get to the, you know, the real, the final ending, it's very obvious that the story is over, but like, you might be like, so wait, is the story over? Okay, this is the part. Now the story's over. Okay. Now the story's over. Okay, now the story's over.
It's like the Lord of the Rings. Yes. The third movie of Lord of the Rings. You're like, so this is the, oh no.
Yes. So, I would say it was very beautiful. It is extremely anime Stand By Me. The two things that might turn you off is that it distinctly has a very Japanese drama feel, and which not like a deal breaker for everybody, but it is definitely a thematic thing that I should mention. And yeah, it does have a like three endings.
But overall, you're like
positive, but like, it would depend if I knew how much people like pick apart plots.
Yeah, but I'm talking about you, Al.
Oh, I thought I had a good time. I immediately noticed that the minute the movie was over. So I was like, I enjoyed it, but let me point out if you'd say.
Okay. Because I feel like you talked about all of that in the review, so anybody can, like, they'll know. I'm this type of person, mm-hmm. but I wanted to know.
I had a good time. But I like, I did feel like the
nitpicky after.
Yeah. It does feel also a little tear-jerker. So once again,
you're like on purpose. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh, we're going to try to make you cry.
Yeah.
Well, this has really made me want to rewatch Stand By Me. Which I think you all must have mentioned that before, because it's on my my most recent, this is things I'm going to rewatch list. So it must have come up already. Unless I just magically, I mean, not that I wouldn't think of that movie, but.
I think you would enjoy it. I think you're the kind of person who can like hand wave like nitpicky stuff. If
it's true.
So I think you might enjoy it. I just wonder. I think you'll have a good time. I think you will enjoy.
This is one I was sad to miss because I was not around. So
something else you might enjoy is the second movie that I saw.
Really?
I
mean, not that I hate Doan's Island or anything. Like, I think that's a very good episode of Gundam. But I'm like, I don't know if I need the movie.
The other movie that I saw, sadly without Kate, was Gundam Doan's Island, which is basically a remake of a kind of infamous episode of the original Gundam TV series that apparently Komino super hates for, yeah, there's like lots of, like Anime World Order did a whole episode about this movie. Like there are apparently a bunch of conflicting stories. It's, you know, a whole bunch of people not like fully telling what's going on, but a lot of he said, she said.
But the important part is that this episode is not included. If you have the American release of the original TV series, this episode is cut, right? Yeah. I've seen it because we watched, like, you know, we like had fan subs or whatever. And so like I've seen the episode. I mean, not that you can't see it, but like if you buy a official release of it, you don't get this episode.
Yeah, you basically have to go on the internets and find a pirated copy to get the Dolan Island episode. And so the Yaz apparently decided, you know what I'm going to do as one of my last directorial things? I'm going to redo the whole Dolan and the Dolan Island episode is also kind of famous for being super janky, like being super off model. And so
you can find out why by reading The Men Who Created Gundam.
Nice plug there. And so it's not only a remake, but like Yaz definitely like expands the story. He like adds a few more elements, like we're essentially like faceless, you know, Zeon troops that come attack them at the end. These guys are now like Dolan's old squad who, what do you call it? They're originally there for a mission, but once they find Dolan's there, they're gonna, what do you call it, take him out because he's a traitor to their team. And so, and he's made a few changes, like one of the girls' names is different and stuff like that. But this is for an hour and a half movie that came from a 20-minute TV series. I would say the Yaz actually did a surprisingly good job of putting enough meat on the bone to, and of course, Kate, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but just because I know this would sell you on it, you know, you seemed hesitant at first, but Makuve is heavily.
I don't even know who that is.
Kate, your favorite character from the original Gundam series. You remember he's the guy who has the fencing Gundam, the fencing Zaku. He's the guy who's, here's how you remember. When he dies, his final words are to give his antique Chinese vase to Cassilia. Your favorite Gundam character, Kate. He's very prominent in this. Your favorite?
Man, going out like a boss.
your favorite Zeon leader, Makube. I can't believe you don't remember him by name.
Well, the thing I was going to say is I think it should be very obvious from us even discussing this that, like, this is, like, deep-cut Gundam lore, so it's not for anybody who hasn't watched Gundam, the original.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I
like, really cares about the lore of, like, you know what I mean? It's not, well, because there could be, there's a lot of Gundam stuff that comes out all the time. So, like, it's worth saying.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, like, they don't introduce Makube.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
There all the time, and you're just, and you just are supposed to know
he's that guy.
Give my base to Miss Cassilia! Guy.
That makes sense to me. This is like that. This, it's a movie for Gundam fanatics to see. That's what it is. So did it, I think it's interesting though what you said, that, or it's nice to hear that they added enough to really make it 90 minutes worth of.
Because they spend a little, the kids are a little more annoying, but they spend a little more time with them. You learn a little more about Dolan. There's his whole, like, former squad, and you see some things with there. There's a little more going on the island than this part.
I would see it. You know, the thing is, like, I don't hate that episode. Like, at least thematically, I don't hate it. You know, like, obviously it looks janky AF, but...
I don't remember. Do you remember your thoughts? Because I weirdly remember very distinctly your thoughts on that episode when we originally reviewed Gundam way back.
Liked the episode because I think it's one of the few times where the other side of the, like, basically you see that, like, Zeon isn't just a, like, mustache twiddling bunch of villains who, like, you know, it shows that, like, there are good and bad people on both sides of the war. And I think you get that more as the story goes on.
I think as much as people seem to really miss it watching Gundam, especially the original series, that authoritarians are bad.
Yes, let's be clear.
As much as a lot of people accidentally or purposely miss that, not everybody who is in an authoritarian regime is a bad person. That what do you call it? Yeah, it's usually... how much do you go along with that system that determines?
Yeah. And the, like, the machine, the military machine of both sides, like, you know, the Federation is, like, enlisting children in their war. Like, they ain't good. Both militaries in Gundam are shitty. They're run because, like, war is bad, and it crushes people, and it enlists children, and, like, all of these things. And, like, both sides are bad. And, like, both sides also have good people in them.
So, yeah, I enjoyed it. But, yeah, it is some deep, like, this makes no apologies. It is, like, some deep-cut Gundam. Like, I'm sure there's some human being out there who could watch this as their first Gundam thing and enjoy it, but, like, it makes no effort to catch you up on anybody. It is, like, just, like, Yaz is very clear, all right, Gundam people are gonna go see this. I don't have to explain Gundam to you people. Let's just do this thing. Oh! Even though he never appeared in the original and has no reason to show up, don't worry. They at least throw scenes of Char and flashbacks and in a dream sequence. So it is not totally Charless, even though,
Yaz would never let that happen.
They know it's not their bread is buttered on. They know that they cannot have...
Speaking of not understanding characters who you're not supposed to agree with their politics on...
I mean, I think we have enough Gundam fans who watch or listen to this podcast that, like, they can decide on their own, like, what their level of Gundam knowledge is. But I thought it was very fun. Thought it was, like, it very much feels like what he did with Gundam the Origin. He like took the initial story and just like built on it logically and like filled in the gaps like Yash usually does. But like, this is for people, this is for original. Like, if you've only like watched Wing, you'll still be lost. Or if like,
oh yeah, of course you have to have seen OG Gundam. And I feel like, I don't think, maybe you don't have to have seen the original TV series. Like, but
you still have to at least watch the three compilations.
Right. Maybe you would have enough context.
I think you'd have enough context with the three. It would just feel like a new side story to you more than anything else.
So do that. Go do that.
Or read Guns of the Origin.
I mean, that's pretty long, too. I'm like, which would be faster, reading Gundam the Origin or watching the three movies?
Watching through.
Probably. Even though the movies are really long. Still. We should just take this moment to once again tell you, if you've never seen original Gundam, you don't have to watch a 43-episode television series. You can just watch three movies. They are streaming on multiple platforms. I rewatched them fairly recently. So just do yourself a favor. Then you're in the know.
You too can become a big Makube fan.
You can, I don't know. Does he appear in the movies? I don't know. Maybe.
I thought he did. I think he appears in the second one, but don't quote me on that.
I don't know.
We'd have to like we're Gundam fans, but we'd have to ask like,
I'll ask the other person who lives in this house soon.
They will instantly know, yes. Unlike us.
Absolutely. Okay, well, maybe I will check this one out. There's a lot of anime movies that came out this year that I haven't seen, and like the list just keeps getting longer. One that I did finally see, but this might have come out last year, I don't remember, is Belle. Which is the most recent movie from, I almost said Makoto Shinkai. Wrong. Mamoru Hosoda. So he is the creator of Mirai, The Boy and the Beast, Wolf Children, that all of that stuff. So this is his latest work, and it's kind of, I feel like this movie is really hard to summarize because I was trying to summarize it in my head and like talking with other people, and it was like, okay, there's just like a lot of things happening in this movie. But
let me try and then you can. So.
Got three sentences.
There is a virtual world and a girl who is somewhat of an outcast finds her place in this digital world. That's kind of
via singing.
Correct. Then, two, she meets a kind of infamous rogue fighter who is this like beast-like fellow, and her learning about him and he is hunted by like the police of this virtual world. And three, it is then the connection between how all of these both stories in the virtual world affect the physical.
Well, they don't affect the physical world. Their own personal journeys. I don't want it to make it sound there's like,
like some kind of like, and digital things are invading the real
yeah,
world.
Or like, what you do in the virtual world becomes reality.
If you die
like,
in the game, you
yeah,
die
yeah, in the like world. It's not Sword Art Online or like Isekai or like.
If your character dies in the virtual world, you are just very sad that you lost all the time that you invested in your virtual character.
So that was a good summary of like the story components, I guess. But then I think maybe what I'm reacting to is there's like a lot of themes or like a lot of different topics, I guess, that's
here.
Because you've got like,
I gave you like the bird's eye.
I thought it was good.
Very uncharacteristically gave you the.
I'm gonna do the like critical role. Like, all right, we're gonna count on the like on the hands, and like this is how many sentences you have. This is like how many words you have.
If I'm forced to work in constraints, I can. If you give me unlimited freedom, I will babble on.
You need guardrails. I thought that was a good summary of like the plot. I think what I am getting tripped up on is like, because there's a lot about like online fame, like what does that mean? Or like going viral, or, and then there's also like
the difference between who you are online and who you are in real life.
That part too, right? Because I think there's a lot in this movie about facades. Like, I think that's a big theme.
I think it's also worth noting, technically, this is based on Beauty and the Beast.
I mean, is it?
And then, yeah, it's why it's called Belle. Yes. There's the Beast. There's like an enchanted castle.
I mean, I guess.
Enchanted world.
I'm not saying you're wrong, but it's like.
Far from the actual story of Beauty.
Yeah, it's like it has some of the trappings of Beauty and the Beast, but like.
Like there's very clearly a Gaston character.
Oh, yeah, his name is so funny, and I forgot to write it down. His name is like.
I don't remember.
I feel like his name is just like Justin or something. Like it's like Justice Justin. Like.
I only ever remembered him as not Gaston.
Yeah. But yeah, so you've got this, but you're right though. Then the other, there's like kind of the Beauty and the Beast trappings that are sort of like, I don't know if they really like totally fit in with the other components, because there's also like a bigger issue in the story that is revealed over the course of the film, which I do not want to say.
Yeah, because I was like, I was trying to figure out how to like.
But there's real world issues that are also important. And I think another component of this is like community and not like ignoring signs of something bad happening to somebody. So like there's that. There's also like.
People not sharing their feelings or like.
Oh, there's like there's some romances, right? Like, and some misunderstanding, like very like teenage misunderstandings of romances that are like not about the virtual world. Like, I don't know. I just felt like to me, there was too much going on in this movie, I guess, is the point of all of this.
I think I explained, I know, I, my general feeling on this was it was. I liked a lot of the ideas. It felt like this was a good second draft. And if Hosoda or the writers had given it three more rewrites, they could have really made this an excellent film. Because there are parts that are long that really needed to be shorter. There are parts that are short, that are extremely oddly short, and you're like, why didn't you expand on this part? And I know it's, like, if this was a, like, conventionally filmed movie, like, you usually film so much movie, and, like, I've heard it said many of time by, like, people who are really into, like, live-action movies and film directing, that, like, you film a lot of stuff, and like half of what the movie you see is the editor's job of like cutting out so much, like cutting the film to the film that you need to see. And I feel like the problem is you don't have any of that additional film in an animated film. So you've kind of got to do all of that editing in the script version, and I feel like that's the problem. If this had been a live action movie, I feel like a good editor could have easily turned this into a great film, but that never happened because the proper editing needed to happen when they were storyboarding and scripting it, because this is definitely a movie that needed like three more drafts to like expand this, cut this, more of this, less of that. This is fine, but it needs to like be a little shorter and over here instead.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you, Al. I think that it was very ambitious, and I think it had a lot of pacing issues due to the ambitious scope of what was being done. Yeah, there are characters that should be introduced way earlier. Actually, if I was, you know, like if I was going back, I think there should have actually been maybe like parallel stories being told, because I think some of the emotional payoffs aren't there in this film because we're not seeing somebody else's story. So like we're getting one side of that story and not the other. So like when certain characters meet or like when certain characters interact, you just don't have that like connection as much as if like I would have liked to see the Belle and Beast stories like being told in parallel. I think that's one component. On the other hand, I think you could make an argument that like the reason that they didn't do that, which I think is valid, is like you shouldn't have to know this person personally to care what's happening to them. I think that is a theme in this story because again, there's like facades and like pretending and like what's really going on or who are you really? So I think that is an argument, but I would still say, okay, fine. If that's your angle, I still say there's pacing issues for like parts that are too long or too short or like need a beat here instead of a beat there. So like, even if, okay, fine. Like if that's your angle, which is valid, I just felt like there was just too many things. Like, I think you could have completely cut out, like, there's like the resolution happens so quickly.
So, yeah. It is definitely, like, so much lead up, and then, like, whoa, that was it? That's all you're going to put on the conclusion? You're, like, making this epilogue do some heavy lifting there.
And I have to say, I felt like I was being, maybe I'm getting to that point, which I need to check myself a little bit of being like too much, thinking too much like an adult. But I was like, the parts of that ending, I was like, is this supposed to be safe? Is this supposed to be something that like you just had a whole bunch of adults agreed that like this was a fine thing to do? Like, I don't know. There were just like questionable things. And I was like, I'm not saying that kids wouldn't go do this because they totally would. But, like, could you, like, not have the adults in their life know about it? Because, like, it just makes it seem, like, way terrible that you're like, yeah, go ahead. Go do that. Like, whoa. I think that's, like, maybe a super bad decision. Or, like, hey, maybe one of her friends also goes. So that, like, I don't know. There were just, like, really questionable things. And then also the ultimate resolution for, like, the Beast character. I was like, are we supposed to think that everything's gonna be cool now? Because I really needed a little bit more in the epilogue for me to feel comfortable with like thinking that everything is like okay, I guess. Like, I don't know. I was like very frightened a little bit by like the end of the movie in terms of the safety of our characters. So I don't know. Yeah, it just, I liked certain things it was trying to do thematically. I liked what it was trying to say, but it just didn't come together. It looked amazing.
Oh yeah, it looks gorgeous. It's well directed. I mean, just visually, anyhow. But
and you know Hosoda and his obsession with like the virtual world. So I was like, we were like, is there going to be some Summer Wars cameos in here? Like some Digimon cameos?
It just, he really just has to learn that, like,
he's not gonna. He has more movies like this than he doesn't at this point.
I wish someone would just take him aside and say, these are fine, you just gotta edit these, like, you need, like, to, like, like have somebody else come in and like do some more drafts with you or like listen to your writers a little more.
Well, that's the thing. He's the writer now. Like the Girl Who Leapt Through Time and Summer Wars, he had a co-writer. And to me, those are his best films.
Because he's unfortunately just gotten too...
I feel like he's too into it, you know? Like, he's too in his own mind. But, you know, a lot of people disagree and think he's, like, the greatest. So, like, what do I know?
I just, Boy and the Beast was, like, once again, another film that could have easily been saved by, a two or three rewrites that would have made that a good film, a great film.
I think he's super capable. I think he has great ideas. I just would love for him to be more open to, like, instead of trying to be, like, this, whatever, auteur or something, be, like, more collaborative. Because I think it would end up with a stronger movie overall. But you know what? They keep letting him make movies and they keep making lots and lots of money. So what does Kate Renner know about being an anime director?
That's my biggest takeaway is like, please just two or three more edits.
Again, it's not like I hated the movie or anything. Mm-hmm. Also, another movie though that I thought was way too long. I was like, this needs to be over.
Like, once again, if it had been properly edited from the beginning and the storyboard and script writing thing would have been far more enjoyable.
We're going to talk about a few things to wrap up the year with some non-anime and manga stuff that we really enjoyed. As I mentioned at the beginning, our January episode will be dedicated to all of our favorite anime and such from the whole year of 2022. It'll be a nice look back. So here, I just wanted to, you know, call out a few things that aren't anime and manga related that we don't necessarily get to talk about all the time. I feel like I don't often recommend other podcasts, one of my absolute favorite podcasts, period, is You Must Remember This. And I recommend all of her back catalog, but the most recent season of the podcast is about films from the 80s, and it's called Erotic 80s, and it's sort of about the sexual revolution in film and like the R rating and things like that that took place, that kind of had a heyday in the 80s and the 90s, and that has actually gone away. So it's kind of looking at that trend in the decade of the 80s, and each episode focuses on a few films, and then also Karina, who is the host of this brilliant podcast, is really great about giving you a lot of cultural context, a lot of history, a lot of, you know, what politics were going on at the time, everything to really give you a sense of what the environment was when these films were coming out. So it's a really great series. You could jump in and listen to any episode in the season. They're not, you know, necessarily you have to listen to all of them, although I recommend all of them. And for a lot of them, they're even movies that I've never seen. So sometimes you could watch the movie before, but it's also not necessary just to get, again, it's like a history podcast plus a film podcast. But if you only listen to one episode, I would definitely recommend the Fatal Attraction Dirty Dancing episode. It's a really great. And then she is gearing up to do Erotic 90s. And I am a Patreon sponsor of hers, so I get like updates. So I know she's currently working on that, so I'm assuming it's going to be released either maybe the end of this year or early next year. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Speaking of history, I've really been enjoying every week Tasting History with Max Miller. He was a Disney employee
that got furloughed. And so to just make some money, he decided to start a YouTube channel where he would talk about his passions, history, and food. And so he goes, and in every episode, he makes a meal from a historical recipe, which is sometimes easier than others because, like, if you only used modern recipes, like, the amounts and all that is all spelled out, whereas old recipes were, you know, very often, like, just here are the ingredients, or like, I'm just going to assume that you are a member of my school or just know how to do X, Y, and Z. So I'm only going to, you know, give you the barest of steps. And sometimes it has to like, can I have this book that has like a Egyptian recipe in it? I have to find someone who can translate it. And then, so he'll like, give a little introduction to the meal he makes and give you all the ingredients. And then, like, well, it's quote-unquote cooking. He gives you a bunch of history, either directly related to the dish or surrounding the dish. And then you get to see him taste it at the end and see how well he did. And it's, you know, if you know me, it's food and history. It's like very good combination. He's a very charming fellow. In fact, so he did that when he got furloughed for a while. And he went back to work a little while, but it was like too much. So he's like now just decided to focus on video series. So now he just does it on the video series. It was like the day I had to quit Disney was like heartbreaking for me. But like this new endeavor is like, you know, is like the only thing that could make me like have to quit working at Disney. But he's really enjoyable. He does like all kinds of stuff. Like he's done everything from like 30 ingredient, like royal hummus from like like a 1900th birthday cake. So I think if you're he recently just did a like where he just read hate mail or like, you know, basically like mean YouTube comments, and a lot of them like the most common one of them is, your face stinks is a lot of people like, too much talking about history, not enough about food. And he's like, this is technically a history podcast, but the food is like, I love eating the food. But
he knows that he created a combination that he is trying to lure you in with the food to teach you history.
I don't see the problem with this game.
I'm not saying it's a bad strategy, but if you are going to lure, some people are going to call you out.
But I mean, he makes the thing. You see him make the thing. So it isn't like, you know. Oh, and he also now has a side one that's drinking history, where he makes like a cocktail or stuff, and then he does the same thing.
That sounds really fun.
Oh, and if anybody's apparently he's like a big Titanic fan. So he did like a whole series of Titanic ones where he did
You mean the James Cameron film?
No. Well, I think he also likes that one. But
that's the first thing I thought of. Like, oh, he's a real big fan of that movie. Okay.
But he did a dish from each of the classes of the steerage, first, second, third class. And he also did like a one from with the crew would eat. And he also did a complimentary drinking history episode. So
that sounds really fun. And also I know somebody who really liked that. Awesome.
So yeah, you could recommend, I think he has that one as like a little separate playlist. That's just the Titanic episodes. So like six. So you get to learn a lot about just like the different classes of the Titanic and the whole history of the Titanic and dishes you could make. That what do you call it?
Probably not.
I will say that every once in a while he like does like kind of get like rarer, like he'll like, here's my link to like this weird like ingredient that I had to get. And he did like do recently go on a trip to Scotland where he made like haggis during his trip to Scotland in like an actual Scottish bakery. Like a not bakery, but like a Scottish kitchen at like one of the castles he stayed at. I feel like not everybody, but I do feel like some of our listeners would enjoy tasting history.
There's definitely a theme. So we've got like a theme in our favorite things, which should be of zero surprise to anybody who bothers to listen to this, because from what I can see, it's history and then murder mysteries. So my other thing that I'm calling out, which I'm not going to even talk about very much because like everybody is talking about it, which is the Glass Onion, like Knives Out sequel. If you've never seen Knives Out, which I was surprised, I thought that that was kind of a splash, but a lot of people I've talked to are like, have never seen it or like hadn't heard of it. So if you haven't seen Knives Out, you actually don't need to see it to see the Glass Onion. They're like completely different cases. So like the murder mysteries are not interconnected in any way. The only interlinking thing is Daniel Craig's character, who is the detective. So like I don't not recommend Knives Out. Knives Out is fucking great. I love it. I rewatched it before I went to see The Glass Onion. But if you haven't seen it for whatever reason, you can just watch The Glass Onion. And it is very, very, very good. It is very, very relevant. Rian Johnson often does, you know, things that are very relevant. But I don't know if he realized, like, he couldn't have known how extremely relevant it would have gotten by the time that the movie came out. Like, it was like, it was relevant, certainly, when he did it. But right now, it's extremely relevant. I've seen a lot of people who have said that they liked it better than Knives Out. I am not in that camp. I really liked it, but I liked Knives Out better. But, like, very satisfying, very enjoyable. If you want to see it, it will be out on Netflix, like, for Christmas. So. Actually, I realize there's another theme here because the director of Glass Onion, Rian Johnson, is married to Corina Longworth, who does the You Must Remember This podcast. Also, the other good thing about apparently Glass Onion is, like, again, people are seeing it who didn't see Knives Out, but also is apparently getting people to talk about Brick. And anything that gets people to talk more about the film Brick, just good. I'm like, oh, great. All of these people are now interested in Rian Johnson's like back catalog. Brick is a fantastic fucking movie. Go see that neo-noir or also see The Glass Onion and Knives Out. And to add even more murder to this podcast, we, of course, watched Only Murders in the Building.
So yeah, I watched it because my mom. I watched it because my mom was like, "Who's been on this podcast once?" Was,
"Al, I saw a series and I think you'd like it. It's called Only Murders in Your Building. It's got Steve Martin and what do you call it?
Martin Short." I was like, "The guy, you know."
"And Martin Short, I think you'd like it."
And I was like, "Ah, I recommend enough things to my mom." That, what do you call it? And it's not in her, what do you call it, Tiobu wheelhouse. So I'm like, I'll watch it. And I really enjoyed it. And I just forgot to recommend it to Kate. So Kate, did I ever recommend it? No. So I think Kate just found it on her own. So, but I remember thinking that, like, I should recommend it to Kate. And I just forgot to.
Yeah, a few people had like kind of mentioned it to me, and the second season released this year. So I didn't watch the first season when it originally released. I like watched basically both seasons back to back. The other part of the trio of crime solvers in Only Murders in the Building are detectives. So we have Steve Martin, we have Martin Short, and we have Selena Gomez. And like they make just like the most charming, like generational friends. There's quite a lot of like secrets and mysteries between the three of them. The thrust of the series is there is a murder in the apartment building that the three of them live in, and they're all three obsessed with a true crime podcast, of course, which are like, you know, huge right now. And they decide that they're going to do their own true crime podcast and try to solve the murder in their building. And that leads to, again, unraveling of a lot of secrets for both them, the three of them as characters, but also like the secret history of the building, the secret history of multiple people who live there. And yeah, it's just, it's like that. It's very cozy, but not in a taboo. Like, it's like you were saying, Al, it's not like a, like, it has that cozy murder feel, but it's not like in the British, in a small British village.
I mean, I like some of my mom's taboo stuff, but like,
I wasn't saying it like, I was just using it as a comparison.
Yeah, it's just by way of thought, but like, my mom has distinct taboo bias. So like whenever she recommends something without a taboo bias, like the thing she just recommended to me when I was over at the house was Spy. But it's also like, I'd say like 60-70% comedy, 30% murder mystery.
Depending on the episode.
Yeah.
Like some episodes are, you know, more solving murders than others. I really, really loved the first season. I really liked the second season.
The first season is definitely the stronger of the season. We'll have to see how three stacks up to the other two. But I would agree with you that like season one is super strong. Like season two is good, but no, not as strong.
Although I think I might have laughed harder in season two than season one, although there are moments. There are so many moments. Like, everybody just has really great timing. I don't know. It's just, like, an incredibly charming show, and I have talked Al's ear off, like, about the mysteries. And so, like, I'm not going to do that here because, like, literally I could do an entire podcast about my feelings. But it's also, like, the mysteries are very important. But I think also, like, the character interactions are a huge portion of, like, what is really enjoyable about the show. So it has both. The third season is allegedly going to be the final season. But who knows? When it actually happens, I'll like say that is true, because I think that they, you know, it feels like they could do as much or as little as they want, basically. Also, something I didn't realize about how so brilliant, but is that the opening of this show actually subtly changes depending on the episode.
I didn't know.
And so I was like, but I didn't notice it until like very late in the game. So I'm like really mad about it because I didn't skip the openings, but you know, I wasn't always like hyper focused.
I guess you'll just have to rewatch
it. Exactly. Oh, I am already. Because I was like, wait, now I have to like see everything that happens in the opening. And it has like really great openings. So it's not like a burden to watch it. I'm sure somebody's done like a supercut of all the openings and I could just do that, but I'm not gonna because I really want to rewatch the show. If you haven't seen it, it's streaming on Hulu and I highly recommend it. It is 100% something that the people who run this podcast would love. And we do. All right, so that wraps up our final episode for 2022.
If you guys want, you could, in the Discord, try to predict what our choices for, like, you know, anime or opening or couple of the year is going to be.
I like that. That sounds like very fun.
Who do you guys think Kate's man of the year in anime is going to be for 2020?
Whew, all right, everybody. We made it. You made it. We're gonna be fine.
Hopefully 2023 will be better, but I think we said that in 2021.
Let's say it every year and hope for the best.